So continuing a not very relishable seminar, which is not a lot of nectar, on problems in ISKCON. We're discussing this non-nectarian subject because anyway everyone discusses it one way or the other. So it's better to discuss it in a what we hope is a relatively sane forum. We hope it's relatively sane. Otherwise, the tendency is to take things out of perspective. Just like someone had brought me a question, they had seen on the internet Gopal Krishna Maharaj's connection with the mafia. Now, it is our tendency to believe what comes on the TV or in the newspaper or in the internet, just the, somehow or other, because something is published or put out in a forum which seems official, we have the tendency to believe it. That's why whenever there's a revolution in a country, the revolutionary party, or on the other hand, the pro-government army, the first thing they try to get a hold of is the TV station, isn't it? I was just in Belgrade, and I was having a tour of, not of the holy places, of some of the bombed out places. And one of the places which the NATO bombers hit was the TV station. Blew it, actually I didn't blow it to pieces, very expert, some new kind of bomb which goes right inside and blows the building up from the inside. So the building stays up, but there's nothing left inside. Because people have a tendency to, we see the influence of the media. People are, they tend to believe what's in the media, whether it's true or not. Actually, since a young age, I've had the opposite tendency. If something's printed in the newspaper or comes on the TV, I always tend to think it's probably not true. I have a strong tendency not to believe this. But most people, they tend to accept what is published without thinking. So if people can put the most bizarre things, and someone will believe it. Even many people may believe it. And then when we discuss it with our friends, and we come to a conclusion that, well, maybe ISKCON's a front for the CIA. Actually, in India, when Prabhupada was present, that means from about 1972 onwards, it was very common that I came to India first in 1976 and I went to stay in 1977, more or less to stay. And it was very common that people would ask us, your organization is part of the CIA, it's funded by the CIA. Many people believed it because it came in the newspapers. The communists party in Bengal especially, and also the newspapers, one sensationalistic newspaper in Bombay, had given the propaganda that our movement is funded by the CIA. So, I mean, it would be nice, maybe, if they did. I mean, they seem to have plenty of money. So, I wouldn't necessarily say no if they did. Or they would say, our members are CIA agents. Well, our reply would be, well, the CIA agents join ISKCON is good because they'll have to stop illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, intoxication, rise early in the morning and chant Hare Krishna. They'll soon become purified. They'll become devotees. Actually, someone with such a background, they can't do it. It's a foolish idea. And the silly things came in the newspaper, just like, you know, in their temples, they don't allow anyone in the deity room. That's probably because they've got secret radio equipment and weapons in there. See? And they give you, when you become a Brahmin initiate, they tell you some secret things which you're not supposed to tell anyone else. Very dangerous movement, you see. Now, you may wonder, well, why do people make such propaganda? Often you'll see that on the internet some such propaganda is often made by people who were members of this movement previously. Jai Pratak Maharaj was making an interesting point that Kali the vanguard of Kali, or the prime representative of Kali, the vanguard. Do you know what that means, vanguard? It's a military term. It means the first troops. It's used idiomatically. The vanguard of Kali is adharma, irreligion. And the sister and wife of adharma, because adharma means irreligion, so he marries his sister or has offspring by his sister, which is irreligious, is mrisha, which means falsity. So many false ideas are propagated by irreligious people who are representatives of Kali. That's one thing. Now, it may be also that many of the things that are being propagated are not untrue. And again the question comes, well, why is it that members or ex-members of our movement are doing this? Jagjag Maharaj also alluded to this when he said that sometimes people, due to our mismanagement or whatever, they become upset. Now this actually, if we are to be honest and not false, falsity is the sister of irreligion. It has been a fact, and probably is still a fact in our movement, that many times people have left or become disturbed due to bad dealings within our movement. Especially someone may be a manager or town president, GPC or whatever, and deals with their subordinates, those that they're supposed to be overseeing in spiritual life, in a what is called a heavy-handed way or an unfair way, and people become upset and go away. It's not unusual, actually. So let's examine this. Why does this happen? It seems to be quite often in our movement that people who get in some position, they tend to deal with others in an insensitive manner. I know myself, I didn't choose to be in management, it just somehow or other happened to me. I happened to be in Bangladesh, and there are about three or four devotees and myself, and who was leading up the yatra left temporarily. So temporarily I was put in charge, and then the temple president didn't come back, so there I was in charge. I didn't ask for it just kind of happened to me. And so for about 10 years or so I was managing different centers of our movement and overseeing the activities in various countries under the guidance of Brahma Vishnu Swami and GPC Chandrataka Maharaj, although I didn't see that much of them because we didn't have that much contact, because to make a phone call from Bangladesh or to have any contact at that time with the outside world was practically impossible. So anyway, after about 10 years of management, I decided I have to get out of this. I'm just telling my personal experience, because I thought it's not very good for me. Management should be done by people who are very tolerant. I'm not very tolerant. People who are very broad-minded. I'm not very broad-minded. There was a whole syndrome in our movement, particularly at that time, there was a lot of competition to see who could be the most successful. Prabhupada, as I was saying, Prabhupada built up this competitive spirit amongst his disciples. He knew especially his American disciples, who were dominating in our movement at the time. They had a very competitive spirit, because American society is very competitive. I would think that this country, having had a socialist past, that spirit of competitiveness is not so strong, because there aren't so many, for a start, there aren't so many opportunities, or there weren't. If there's no business opportunities, then there's no struggle to get on top of another and succeed in so many ways. Whereas America, is the whole culture thrives on struggle and competitiveness, and one person get ahead of another. America is famous for the Wild West. Right, you have all John Wayne movies that are translated in most of the languages of the world. How the fastest gun in the West, whoever can shoot first, he comes out on top. So that's very much part of American culture, and Prabhupada dovetailed that in Krishna's service by prodding or pushing his disciples. See how much you can do for Krishna. He once said, what's the use of your being Americans unless you do something wonderful for Krishna? So there was very much the culture in our movement of competitiveness. I will do better than you, and therefore I will manage my centers better than you. My zone will be better than yours. We will make more devotees. We will distribute more books. Achievement-oriented, which is good for spreading Krishna consciousness. But as has been pointed out, sometimes the goals of the organization, they may be attempted to be achieved without consideration, without due or proper or complete consideration of the members of the organization. In other words, I remember some devotees, they were collecting for building our Vrindavan and Mayapur and Bombay temples. And they had to go out every day and collect lots of money. And I don't know if you can catch this, the meaning of this. I'll try and translate it. But there was a saying, don't moan, don't groan, just go out and pick the bone. Don't moan, don't groan, you can understand. Do you know what picking the bone means? It means it's a horrible thing. When you eat chicken, you take the tiny little pieces off the bone. So picking the bone in ISKCON terminology means when you meet someone, you take every cent out of their purse. Don't leave any little bit in the purse. So don't moan, don't groan, just go out and pick the bone. These were the kind of sayings. In other words, you have to go, don't complain, just work hard and bring in lots of money. So it might be very good for increasing, well, it's good for bringing in money, at least for the short term. Didn't create wonders for our image in Japan, where this was going on. And it's, on the whole, not very healthy for spiritual life, but it looks good for a short time. So there have been many such instances of pushing for the sake of some achievement. And often devotees are happy to do that, because after all they're engaged in Krishna's service. Prabhupada did say this is a pushing movement. He said, my spiritual master is pushing me, I am pushing you, and you should push others. But you're not supposed to push them off the edge of the cliff. Push them. It's a great art, actually. I mean, sometimes people say, you know, oh, Tamil president's so heavy. But if he's not heavy, then the tendency is everyone enjoys sleeping 18 hours a day or more. Just enough time to get up and pass stool and eat something and then go back to sleep again. And some heaviness has to be there. You can't always be ethereally nice if you're going to manage anything, including a spiritual movement, especially a spiritual movement, which is an active movement. Our movement is a movement. That means we're supposed to be moving. It's not, movement means we're not just frozen in time. We're not just meditating, but we have to move. So to move, some pushing is required. And in spiritual life, some pushing is required. some chastisement is required. But exactly where the balance comes between sometimes pushing and chastisement, often it's very good to motivate people in devotional service or to get them off the lazy platform and get them engaged in Krishna service. But sometimes it hurts people's sensitivities so much, or sometimes it can be a cumulative effect that someone, they tolerate once, they tolerate twice, they tolerate three. After some time they become, in ISKCON hippie terminology, fried. You all know that word, fried? It's an ISKCON word. It's a hippie term, actually. I'm fried. So exactly how to keep the balance between putting the pressure and not frying people out, it's very difficult to see. I mean, even Prabhupada, with some of his disciples, they couldn't take it, actually. I mean, Prabhupada was, you can imagine, intense. Saintly people tend to be intense. They have a mission in life. They want to do something for Krishna. They don't tolerate nonsense. So Vaishnavas, they tend to be intense people. I mean, just look at the Bhagavad Gita. The words Krishna uses, Murha, Vimurha, Naradhama, Dushkriti, these are all heavy terms. Krishna is very heavy. So sometimes Prabhupada, the devotees who are with Prabhupada, they found it difficult to stay with Prabhupada because he was very heavy. And Prabhupada was sometimes very, very heavy. Especially with devotees who were quite close to him. That means he trusted them that they would accept his chastisement, not as something to which is just meant to crush them, but for their own good. In the guru-disciple relationship, that trust has to be there. If the guru can't chastise the disciple, if the disciple can't take the chastisement, that means he actually doesn't trust that the guru has his best interest in mind. So that is there. So in one sense, you could say the heaviness in this movement, in what devotees, it came from Prabhupada in one sense. So it's not necessarily a wrong thing. But one thing, of course, is that Prabhupada, he was always chastising from the platform of pure compassion. Whereas others may be chastising, there may be some false egotism or insensitivity, or like we say, they're just trying to take some service but not really so much concerned about that person's individual well-being. So we have to, I mean, it has been a syndrome within our movement, and probably is still so, because human nature is like that. I certainly don't think it's as pronounced as it was previously. I remember when I joined, that sannyasi, generally everyone, sannyasi meant someone who, the general prototype or stereotypical understanding of a sannyasi was someone who was extremely heavy. Most of the sannyasis were just extremely heavy, and it was just, like, you know, everyone was quaking. There were some instances of sannyasis who were very humble and friendly, but mostly it was just like very, very heavy. That was considered the way sannyasi, it was what was expected for some reason or other. It was like that. So I think things have changed. I mean, it's not that Sridhar Maharaj was quoting yesterday, HH, his heaviness. Who is the heaviest of them all? But at least that syndrome is not as pronounced as it used to be. And in general, our movement is not as heavy as it used to be. It's also not as active as it used to be. I mean, one thing we say, you know, it was so heavy and this and that, but at the same time, a lot of service was being done for Krishna. Now maybe we're not so heavy, but on the other hand, we don't have so much pushing for book distribution and expansion and so many things. So in some ways that pressure and heaviness, it was a good thing. Not necessarily a bad thing. But not everyone can take it for a long time. And especially when people get older, probably it's more difficult to take these things. And now, most of the members of our movement, increasing numbers, they don't live in ashrams. So their relationship with the movement is a little different. When you're a brahmachari in the ashram, then that is brahmachari. Actually, that is brahmachari training. A brahmachari is supposed to be extremely submissive. A brahmachari especially is supposed to be extremely submissive to the guru, and temple presidents are supposed to be representatives of the guru. So brahmacharis are supposed to take all kinds of austerities and difficulties, but householders or congregational members, it's a different relationship with the room. We can't expect that congregational member or someone who's working outside comes in. We can't expect them to interface or with the movement in the same way as a brahmachari might be. So for various reasons, our movement is, it's definitely less heavy than it was, but it's not that people also don't get discouraged, sometimes due to rough treatment. What to do if you're roughly treated? Well, probably the best thing is just to tolerate it and take it as somehow or other Krishna's trying to say something to you. I mean, it may be in many cases that what is said, the chastisement or whatever it is relevant. It may be our false egotism that we can't take the chastisement, although it's the fact that some of the people are chastising, it may be that they're doing so because they themselves have some problem. They are too rough in their behavior or whatever. If someone is repeatedly very rough in their behavior, we have systems in our movement whereby you can complain. You're supposed to complain to your GBC authority, or maybe some regional council or whatever. But practically speaking, to be quite honest, these systems, they don't really work very well in our movement. We have, there used to be a justice ministry, I don't know if there still is, in which anyone, they can complain if they think someone's being unjust, but practically speaking, from what I've seen, these systems, they don't really work very well. I mean, it's not that our societies, I mean, even in Kami society, I know in different countries it works. In India, if you want to get justice, forget it. I mean, people, that why one reason there's so much crime in India and so many shootings is because it's jungle law. You can't get justice. If someone steals money from you or steals your sister or something like that, you can't go to the police because the police they're paid off by the crooks. They're brothers and best friends. So the only way to do it is to hire someone to shoot the other party or shoot him yourself. It's like jungle. It's amazing how the country goes on at all. It's so anarchic. So that's one thing I say sometimes in maybe sarcastic humor, is that our movement is spreading Indian culture. It's like we're not very organized. We're spaced out, fried out. So to be quite honest, although theoretically we have justice systems within our movement, they don't really work very well. If there is some problem, it would have to be a very big problem before it got investigated at all. And even if it is investigated, it may not be such an impartial or complete or fair investigation. This is as far as I've seen so far. Our movement is not well organized on the social level. That is, at least speaking subjectively, I would consider that to be a fact. I'm not saying that our movement is a failure because of that. I'm not saying everything is doomed because of that. But it is a problem. We do have social problems. Jagatabha was just saying the other day that we don't have any problems in our movement. So that's true in one sense. I mean, you chant Hare Krishna, you can be happy. That's true. But on the other hand, there are problems also. From the absolute or ideal point of view, there are no problems, but factually, from the social point of view, we do have various problems. We are having many problems, how to organize ourselves. It seems that we don't really know where we fit in or what we're supposed to do, because we don't fit in. We don't fit into the modern world. The Hare Krishna movement is promoting no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. Life based on loving God, which is opposite to the culture of the modern world. We don't fit in. And it's, you know, how to educate our children. Well, Prabhupada wanted gurukuls. He called the modern schools slaughterhouses, but then the first generation of our gurukuls didn't work out very well. So parents want to send their children to gurukuls, and then, sorry, they want to send their children to government schools or private or kami schools. So, and then get some job in kami society, and then you get mixed up with kami society. And we're trying to fit, in English there's a saying, trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. We're trying to be Krishna conscious in a society which doesn't really foster it. So we, as a result, we have various social problems. Prabhupada wanted, another thing I not necessarily disagree with Jantar Maharaj, but the emphasis he was putting, he was saying, where did Prabhupada say everyone would live in our ashrams? So Prabhupada was actually stressing that he wanted to set up farm communities, and actually many farms were purchased. Many acres of farmland were purchased in Prabhupada's time for setting up farm communities. So it may not be that everyone lives in an ashram as such, but Prabhupada said people will join our farms in their millions. Prabhupada wanted to set up farm communities. So it may not be that everyone lives in our ashram, they may be living at home, but he wanted that they would live in our communities. And of course, he was talking about preaching within the cities. The people who don't join our communities, they can also become Krishna conscious at home while they're doing their job in regular Kami society. So Prabhupada wanted to set up our own communities, which would circumvent many of the problems of having to live trying to be Krishna conscious in a society which does not foster that. He wanted that we have large farm communities. For various reasons, this hasn't happened in most countries. We do have some successful farm communities or rural communities in countries where agriculture is the main mode of living, where most people don't live in cities. That means in countries like Bangladesh, Indonesia, Brazil, although Brazil has many big cities also, but many people still live on the land. So our communities have been successful in places where it's more economically viable and where people are used to that. Because in most of the world, people that join our movement come from middle class or more intellectual, more educated kind of background. They're mostly city people they're not very much inclined towards working the land or farm life. And in countries like England and America, the laws or the social setup is such that it doesn't favor small farms, it favors big farms. So the economic setup is such that it's cheaper to buy milk than to keep cows and take milk from them, due to government subsidies and so many things which favor, which the whole economy is set up for agribusiness or big farms which are owned by huge companies. It's not set up for the small, it's set up against the interest of the small farm. So for various reasons we haven't been able to set up such communities, and we're struggling to find our identity. Where do we fit in modern society, where we don't really fit in at all, but we're trying to, and it's a bit of the square peg in the round hole syndrome. Therefore we have problems. Someone was asking that, well, how can I be Krishna conscious when I'm living at home and I'm doing my job and I have to mix up with Kami people and I'm teaching and I have to teach all kinds of nonsense which are opposite to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and the whole education system is based on the whole education system is just, it's a, they say we're so kind, we're educating. Actually, the education system is just to train you to be a moron, to train you to be a submissive dog of the economic system. Be a good boy. We'll pat you on the head and throw you some scraps of meat. You work very hard, be a respectable citizen, get a nice job, live in a little house, we'll give you a car and you can have a holiday in Premantura, and be good and don't do anything wrong and don't become a Hare Krishna devotee and everything will be very nice. So the education system is training you to be a member of a secular, humanistic, basically atheistic society. So how devotee himself wanted to fit, if he wanted, he could have lived very peacefully in Hiranyakashipu's home. He was his son. He could have lived very peacefully. All he had to do was compromise and say, yes, my dear father, you are very nice. Killing Brahmins is very nice. Being anti-Vaishnav is very nice. He could have been living very happily. But he didn't. He didn't compromise. And therefore, life for Prahlad under Hiranyakashipu was not very nice. So the alternative we have, if we want to fit into this society at all, we have to compromise. And compromise means our Krishna consciousness is gone. So it's very difficult. How can we fit in? Either we have to bluff ourselves, and for instance, we send our kids to Kami schools, and then we have to sit and help them with their homework, and then the question is, describe how man has descended from monkeys. You have to teach this rascaldom to your children. If you're going to fit in to the modern society and make them respectable citizens. So it's a great dilemma. We don't fit in the society at all. Now here I'm moving into another subject matter. I'm moving a little bit away. The subject was devotees getting fried by leaders within our movement. And also someone was speaking to me, I was saying that he's from a center, there's no real, you know, because the GBC in this area, he has a huge area and he doesn't come here very often, especially to smaller centers. And even if he does come, I mean, if you come for like 1 day or 2 days a year, how much useful input can you give anyway? I mean, it's always nice if a sannyasi or GBC member comes, very inspiring, but as far as giving some practical guidance or helping to overcome certain problems which have built up, a short visit, it isn't very useful. Now Sridhar Maharaj is saying that there is some restructuring of the GBC going on to try and make the whole thing more effective, but in many ways it may not be very effective in many places. Prabhupada started off with 12 GBCs and now it's expanded to more than 30. I'm not sure exactly how many there are, but the number of centers of the movement has expanded far more than the number of GBCs. I mean in Russia alone, in the CIS alone, if you take all the Nam Hatha centers and everything together, we have more. Indra Jamna Maharaj was once saying to me, he was thinking of visiting, going on a tour of all the centers in the CIS, and then he realized that if he visited each one for 1 day, it would take him more than a year. So that's wonderful. But on the other hand, it's wonderful our movement has expanded so wonderfully. But on the other hand, what it means is that many centers have sprung up with many inexperienced devotees, and they've never been trained themselves properly. They've never had training from senior devotees, and the centers are there, but there isn't much overseeing of them or guidance of them. So you're left with some, God himself is very junior, but himself is an authority over others. And you can just imagine what kind of fun it is being a GPC in Russia. Therefore, at one point, I know Niranjan Maharaj, and I think Mohini Sutta Prabhu also, when they took over different areas, one of the first things they did was close down many of the centers. Because they thought that many of the centers were being run in such a way that they thought it better not to have any center. Because the people who are running themselves didn't properly understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, or how to deal with others in Krishna consciousness. So it would be, they opined that it would be better to have a few centers which can be overseen properly and run properly, rather than have many centers with all kind of odd bods running them, and making the International Society for Something Consciousness, not exactly sure what consciousness, but maybe not exactly Krishna consciousness. Some kind of consciousness was there, no doubt, but consciousness of what, we weren't sure. So this could be termed as teething problems. A young baby has his, when he has his first teeth, they're painful. The baby is often crying. He must have the same, because I mean, the babies in this country have the same thing, right? When their teeth first start to grow, it's painful, so the baby cries a lot. Didn't have any babies yet. So our movement is young and we're going through many teething problems. Now there has been a lot of talk in recent years. I mean, it's not that devotees are not aware of these things. We are aware. Exactly what to do may not be so easy to say. There's been a lot of talk within our society on how to improve relationships among devotees and how to deal with each other better, which is, it's nice that we're talking about these things. Often our devotees, they start to read books by New Age gurus or whatever about how to be nice to others, how to smile at them, how to smile. Lift the corners of your mouth slightly at each edge. Try hard, practice every day. With practice, you also can do it. It's not impossible. I did it, I smiled. Try to be nice to others. Of course, a lot of these theories of be nice to each other, love each other, open your heart to others, be kind. If these nice sentiments are enacted simply from the bodily platform, then we end up with bodily consciousness. That's why often we hear people say, be nice, be kind, be good. But you can't be nice or kind or good unless there's some substance there. Unless you have some actual good feeling within your heart. So actually the process to be good, nice, etc. is to be Krishna conscious. And maybe we had some misunderstanding of what Krishna consciousness means. But actually if someone is Krishna conscious, then he can actually be nice. This some kind of artificial niceness that won't last actually. Nor is it very effective. Just like real niceness may mean sometimes yelling at someone. If you're actually nice to them. Just like if someone, Prabhupada gave the example of some, if someone is walking with his head in the air and he's walking and there's a cliff in front of him. He's flying a kite, looking up at the kite and there's a cliff. And you come up to him and say, hello sir, there's a cliff in front of you, don't disturb me. You're going to fall off the cliff. Don't disturb. Why are you disturbing? You fool! You're going to fall off the cliff! Why are you shouting at me? to shout at him to wake him up. If you don't shout, he could be very nice, he falls off the cliff and breaks his neck. Sometimes you have to be heavy for the person's own benefit. So niceness doesn't necessarily mean just always smiling and saying, "You're so wonderful." Prabhupada talked about the mutual praising society. I've seen sometimes in India we're invited to speak at Rotary Club functions. Do you have Rotary Club here? Do you ever speak at Rotary Clubs? What happens, say they have 20 people in the room, at every meeting one person stands up and praises the person next to him. "Well, you're such a wonderful person, and blah, 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 and you're so great and kind, blah, 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 blah." And then that person stands up and says, "Well, I think," and then he praises someone else next to him. Then they go around in a circle. And then by the end of, after half an hour, everyone has praised everybody else. And then they have a cup of tea, and that's the Rotary Club meeting. It's a Rotary. They go around in a circle. They praise each other. And they make each other feel very nice. Everyone praises everyone else. So it's hollow. There's nothing, there's no substance in that. A real friend is someone who can say something which is, it may not be palatable, but it's for your benefit. So being nice doesn't necessarily mean always smiling and saying nice things about each other. Although definitely in Krishna consciousness, practically speaking, we see that most people need about 99 times encouragement for one time chastisement. If it's 99 times chastisement and only once or maybe never encouragement, then it's difficult for most people to take it. It's better if we try to promote this mode of encouraging others in devotional service. But this artificial niceness of always calling each other very nice, everything you do is very nice, that it's artificial. If there's some fault, if we actually have the good wish, the well-being or the benefit of others in mind, we should be prepared to point that out also. Of course, it's not the job of everyone to point out everyone else's fault. Generally, more senior devotees should point out the fault is also more junior. Or among equals, there may be something, just like if someone's Prabhu, how you do it also. If you say, "Prabhu, don't mind me saying, but you know, I think you're sleeping too much these days, or you're not chanting your rounds very clearly." If it's pointed out in a concerned way, in a humble way, others may be more inclined to listen to it. So on the one hand, we don't want a culture within our movement of simply chastising others all the time. Rather, it's better if devotees encourage each other more and more. On the other hand, we don't want this kind of artificial Rotary Club kind of niceness. That's also not required. It's artificial niceness. So definitely there has been a lot more consciousness of this within the last few years, and devotees in general have been much more careful in the ways they deal with, in the ways they deal with each other. That's also there. As I said, it may be that as a result that we're being so careful that maybe we're not pushing enough. But on the other hand, we don't want to push so hard that we push others away from our movement, and even they may become bitter. Now, that we're talking about rough dealings. There have also been sometimes unfair dealings, improper dealings. Often we find that people, when they first come to Krishna consciousness, they're very innocent, and sometimes they may want to offer some donation or a lot of money, or sometimes the devotees in the temple, they work very hard to collect funds, and then the leader just spends it all on something which, some, another English idiom, pie in the sky. Do you have any equivalent for that in Croatian? Pie in the sky. Pulinka neva. What does that mean?
Kula means like tower in the sky.
Tower in the sky, yeah. Akasha Pushpa in Sanskrit. It's flowers growing in the sky. In Bengali they say ghorer dim, horse's eggs. Some, there's no such thing. Do horses in Croatia lay eggs? No, nowhere. They do. Something like that. So some silly project, they spend maybe 100,000 Deutschmarks or something on some silly thing. Just a waste of money, or they buy some house, or they get cheated, or maybe that they purchase something for which, well, you know, the town president needs a good facility to live in. So I hereby, for the sake of serving Krishna, I hereby purchase this huge 5-star condominium for myself to live in. And meanwhile, the 30 brahmacharis can live in 1-room hut. I mean, we're exaggerating a little bit here, but the point is there may be some misuse or abuse, misuse of funds, abuse. These things happen. These things do happen. I'm not saying they don't happen, especially where there's not good supervision. These things happen. How to check? Well, we need a tighter system of checks and balance. There are systems of checks and balance in our society. They don't always work very well, and especially in this country, like there isn't really much organization, you may have noticed, which may also be something to do with the nature of the people, your own nature. As I was saying to one sannyasi yesterday or the day before, that it's a very Croatian people, I said, they seem to be quite well balanced, quite sane kind of people. He said, yeah, but he said that if you bring 10 Croatians together, there'll be 11 political parties. Is it true? You have that tendency? It's like Malaysia. The people are so nice and polite and so nice, but when it comes to organizations, they fight like anything. In personal dealings, they're wonderful. Very level-headed, cool, often it is, when it comes to organization, no one wants to accept anyone else's authority. There has to be some authority, otherwise things don't go on at all. It's without any authority, how can things go on? It's just we want to make everything absolutely democratic. Okay, so right, the pots have to be washed. All right, let's have a meeting. Bring all the devotees together. And after 3 hours and discussing and, you know, and still, no, I should not, he should wash the pots, and, you know, after 3 hours, and, you know, and then, and it doesn't work, does it? I mean, it works much better if there's a temple president and or a temple commander who says, hey, wash the pots. Okay. It's much more practical than having meetings. Once Prabhupada said, better than having meetings, revolutions, dissolutions, and no solutions, better chant Hare Krishna. So that may be one of the reasons that there are problems with the organization in this country. It's maybe, you know, it may be your nature. You're living next to Italy also, where, you know, they haven't had it's always coalition governments, and the government's always breaking down. And it's also the home of Machiavelli and Mussolini. I guess every country has their different people. So it may be something to do with the very nature of your people, that you're not very well organized. Because if it is your nature not to accept authority, then it becomes more difficult for you. Sorry. Don't shoot me, please. Kindly. So, I mean, these are some of the realities in making a worldwide movement for Krishna consciousness. It's not easy. Often in India, big businessmen used to come to Prabhupada and give their advice, because they run big companies. People who are running factories and organizations with literally thousands of employees, they would come to Prabhupada and say, well, I think you should do this, and I think you would do that. Prabhupada would often say after this, they don't understand how difficult it is to organize a spiritual movement. It's relatively easy to run a business. It's not easy, but it's relatively easy because you pay people and they have to work for a living. And if they don't do their job properly, you fire them and you hire someone else who does the job. That's how it works. But in a spiritual movement, people are not supposed to be getting paid. People are offering their services voluntarily. On the other hand, we expect that people who come, especially those who live in our ashrams, they're expected to surrender and work hard. But not everyone's a pure devotee. That's why you're in this material world. So how to motivate people to work when they don't get any material benefit? It requires actually to lift people to the spiritual platform. But it's not so easy. And those who are in the position of trying to lift others to the spiritual platform, they may not be that much on the spiritual platform themselves. The difficulties become compounded. But at least those who join our ashrams, actually it's better that people understand what they're doing before they move in. And as Prabhupada said, our ashrams, they're not places for lazy or crazy people. They're not places for lazy people. If you're lazy, then don't join an ashram. If you like to sleep all day, you're welcome, but sleep in your own home. If you like to just to chant Hare Krishna, sometimes we don't like to work hard for Krishna. We're not forcing, but then you shouldn't live in an ashram. And crazy people also, ashram is not meant to be a lunatic asylum. It's meant for people who are at least relatively sane. So there are difficulties in organizing a big worldwide movement, especially it's come up so quickly. I've outlined some of the problems today. I haven't really given any solutions. The real solution is to become Krishna conscious. But at the present time, our movement is not at such a stage of organization that problems are very quickly, such problems such as I've said, just like sometimes if devotees are being mistreated or something, it may not be that the problems are dealt with very quickly. That's a fact. So, I mean, if you don't want to live in an ashram, I suggest you choose very carefully where you go and see that you go to a place where the leaders, they know how to look after you. Sure, don't just join anyone. I always, despite all the things I'm saying, I mean, I am optimistic about this guy. I'm just trying to be realistic also. Optimism is one thing, but just some kind of blind optimism, that's not very is not very useful. We should be realistic also. So I always encourage young unmarried people who come to our movement to spend at least 1 or 2 years in our ashrams. If you want to go afterwards and have grihastha life, family life, and have a job and all this, all right. But if at all possible, if you spend some time in our ashrams, that will be a very good experience for you. For all that I've said today, I basically believe that ashram life is a very good experience in training and surrender to Krishna. But then I also direct people, where is a good place to spend some time? Because where I know that the devotees will get looked after nicely, where the leaders are mature, the leaders are steady, they've been there for some time, where they will have a good transcendental Krishna conscious experience. So in many centers, not in many, or at least in some centers, it may be that the leaders, they're not so mature, or they have a particular way of dealing, which it may be difficult for many devotees to relate with. So I would recommend, definitely if you have the opportunity, if you're young and you have the opportunity, spend 1 year or 2 years in one of our ashrams. You know, you can commit your life also if you like, be a lifelong missionary. The Catholic Church spread all over the world due to so many people committing themselves as missionaries. My mother is from Ireland, where it used to be a tradition that in every Irish family, at least one of the boys would become a priest or a monk or a missionary, and one of the girls would become a nun. Did you have that tradition here in Croatia also? I think, well, at least you couldn't in the last few generations, because you were they couldn't go outside to become missionaries. But that was the tradition. So it's nice, it's very good if some of you commit your lives to missionary activities, become a permanent, full-time preacher, give your life to Krishna, as Nityodit Maharaj was quoting Srila Prabhupada, give your life to Krishna. Preach, spend a life preaching Krishna consciousness. Of course, you can also do that within the Grihastha Ashrams. Now, the Grihasthas can't preach, but Brahmacharis, they have more facility to do so. Women are recommended to get married, but before you get married, you can spend 1 or 2 years in one of our ashrams. That would be a very nice experience for you also. Very good training in Krishna consciousness. So, Hare Krishna, I've outlined some of the problems, and realistically speaking, these problems may continue to a greater or lesser degree. These are some of the facts of life within ISKCON at the present time. It doesn't mean that the organization as a whole is wrong, but these are some of the problems that I thought I would discuss, because people, why I'm doing this, because people bring these problems to me and say, this is happening, this is going on. Yes? It may be. It may be. We're not saying that this movement is perfect. We are saying that this movement is perfect in as much as you can attain the perfection of life within this movement. But it's not that everyone within this movement is perfect, or that our mode of operation within an imperfect world is always perfect. So these are some of the problems I'm just saying, trying to give some perspective on them. Again, I'd like to emphasize, although it sounds like I'm just being complaining and moaning and groaning, it's not my basic outlook. Basically, I'm very optimistic about Krishna consciousness, very positive, but at the same time, I'm trying to be realistic, because otherwise, if we just always say, you know, yeah, everything's wonderful, everything's, then they say, well, what about this, and what about that, and what about this, and if we simply ignore it, they may think that we're living in a fantasy world or a dream world, and that we can't help devotees when they do face such problems. So such problems may be there. If you do encounter such problems, just like, for instance, some devotees are being, you feel some devotee is being unnecessarily harsh with you, then I would suggest you consult maybe with some other senior devotees and see what can be done to overcome that problem. Maybe you just have to tolerate it. Maybe you yourself are being unnecessarily oversensitive, or maybe it's your false ego that you can't take a proper chastisement, or it may be that a certain leader or other devotee is being as harsh in a somewhat imbalanced way. So if you feel that is the case, then please try to share that. If you think there's really a problem, then please try to share that with some other senior devotees. Let's see. Our movement, it would be very nice if we would start to try to solve problems before they become bigger problems. Generally, in our movement, if there's any problem, we tend to kind of overlook it and hope that it will go away in the course of time. But practically speaking, the material world doesn't work like that. Usually things get worse, and then it becomes very bad, and then it becomes a serious problem. You may know recently the teachings of Stephen Covey were very popular within our movement. I'm not a great fan of Stephen Covey myself. I never went through his books and all this, but I haven't read his books, but just from being in ISKCON in the last few years, you can't help but hear some of the things he says. And some of the things, one of the reasons he's popular, obviously, he says some things which are, he has some things to say which are quite intelligent. One of them is about being proactive. Proactive means, instead of becoming active when a problem has become so great that it's, when the house has fallen down to try and build it again, it's another English saying, a stitch in time saves nine. You must have a saying in Croatian. You have a little hole, stitch it. If you don't stitch it and you leave it for 2 weeks, it'll become a bigger hole. So instead of you doing one stitch, you have to do nine. So a stitch in time saves nine. Do you follow that? What's the saying in Croatian? There must be a saying like this. What does that mean? Translated back into English? Yeah. In Bengali, they talk about closing the barn door after all the cows have run away. So Kavi, I mean, this is so-called common sense in every language of the world, but Kavi has put it into some kind of analytical language. He talks about being proactive. See the problem before it becomes a big one, act at that time, and then you won't have such a big problem to deal with later. I mean, if you act early on, then often you can prevent a situation. Often the situation becomes so grave, you can't really solve it. The problem becomes insolvable. Just like if someone is expressing something out of discontent and you ignore them, if you take heed of their discontent, you might be able to solve the situation. But if they get so fried that they go away, you may not be able to bring them back at all. So as far as I can see, although we have had a lot of teachings of Stephen Covey, we're not proactive. Our movement tends to overlook problems and say, you know, everything's all right, everything's wonderful, there are no problems, and then all of a sudden, crisis. What's that called? Being reactive, retroactive? What's the Kavi word? Retroactive? I guess it would be means. Reactive. And retroactive would mean being active after the problem's all. Reactive means you react to a problem. Proactive means you act just when you see the problem arising. And retroactive means it's closing the barn door after the cows have run away. It's too late. You're taking action which no longer has any relevance. It's too late. So, well, maybe we're just too spiritual. We have another English saying. These sayings are quite good, actually. They explain the situation. We have our head in the clouds. In Croatian also, people have their heads in the clouds. The opposite of that is being down to earth. Do you have being down to earth in Croatian also? If someone is very practical, we say they are a down-to-earth person, as opposed to being head in the clouds. They're down-to-earth. So we're not such a down-to-earth movement. We're a very ethereal movement. Very spiritual movement, no doubt about it. I mean, what we're preaching to Yathov Bhaktiradhok Shaji, service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Transcendent Lord, Aitukiya Pratihata, unmotivated, uninterrupted service to the Transcendent Lord. I mean, what we're preaching, there's no doubt about it. This Krishna Conscious Movement, the ideal, the religious teachings are far, far beyond anything else in this world. I mean, we've definitely got the, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, the Vastavik Vastu, which it means the real thing, before Coke. Before Coke came, which isn't the real thing, it's just absolute garbage. It's just, what a con. You know what con means? Con means, it comes from the word confidence trick. It means cheating. You take someone into your confidence and trick them. So from the word confidence trick comes con trick, comes con, the word con, to con somebody. So Coke is just a bunch of chemicals with bubbles and sugar, and they call it the real thing. There couldn't be anything more artificial. But actually Krishna consciousness is the real thing. How to live in the transcendent, in the nature of the transcendent reality while we're living within this world of the three modes of material nature, ourselves being much influenced by the three modes of material nature, is the dilemma facing our movement. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Because of what you said, don't you think that this was priority number one. Now we should be establishing proper training and education of current and future leaders of our society. Including deputy residents, and this is the only way that we can jump out of this current, how should I say, crisis management.
Crisis management, is that another copy term? Sounds like it. It sounds like a description of ISKCON also. Brilliant. Brilliant. I'm not saying it as a joke, I'm not saying it facetiously, I'm not saying it sarcastically. I'm saying it realistically. Our movement works on crisis management because we're not proactive. That's the way it works. Yes, I agree. And it is slowly beginning to happen. Things tend to change quite slowly within our movement. Deviations go very quickly. But positive changes, they tend to take place quite slowly. But it has been going on for some time, that educational programs within our movement they've come up. They didn't, for instance, we didn't used to have seminars like this, where devotees come together for some days and they hear topics of Krishna consciousness. We didn't used to have VIHE, these programs where devotees come for some time and study topics from senior devotees. There's also Bhaktivedanta College of Education and Culture. So gradually educational systems are coming up within our movement. And in fact, I think about 3 years ago, the GBC made a resolution that the prime focus of our movement should be on education and that the prime focus of all our centers should be on education. So that may not exactly have happened so far, but it appears the GBC are aware of this and are trying to orientate the movement in such a direction. So it is happening. Now, not exactly what you might call leadership training. So there have been some attempts at management training and all this, but they don't seem to have been very effective. But at least the beginning, I mean, definitely there's a beginning in education in terms of education in Shastra. That is beginning. And there are even courses, I mean, there were just recently in Radhadesh, there was a course by Ravindra Sarup Prabhu going through the history of ISKCON, some of them. And then there was a course on how to avoid being exploited or something. I mean, I wouldn't like to take a course like that myself. But I guess it has its relevance. So the beginnings are there. Another important thing that I think we can all consider, and especially maybe yourself, I think you're a somewhat older devotee, is that this movement is composed of individuals of which we ourselves are also one. So apart from saying why doesn't the GBC do this and why doesn't the GBC do that, we can also see that individually what we ourselves are doing. We can also work on a grassroots level, another idiom. Grassroots level. That means at the local level. To try to make things, in other words, within our own sphere of influence. If you know, for instance, 20 devotees, you can work among them to try to improve things. Or in your own town, you can start, if you're more senior and you have, if you are familiar with the Krishna conscious philosophy, you yourself can, for instance, start systematic classes in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It's not, someone was writing to me recently asking, would I like to sponsor some GBC proposal that sannyasis don't mix with women? So I wrote back and said, well, anyway, no one should be a sannyasi if they don't understand that anyway. And I wrote back and said that, well, that if you have a specific, if there is any particular, it seems that you have a particular person or case in mind, Why don't you just refer to this particular case instead of trying to make some legislation for the whole sannyas ashram, just for the case of one person who they thought were too friendly with, I don't know exactly, they didn't get into details. So he said, well, you know, I can't say because I don't want to make offenses and this and that and the other. He said, but then I wrote back and said, well, even if you have legislation, then it won't make any difference anyway, unless someone is prepared to say something or do something. So it's not, the point I'm making here is that it's not necessarily that you say, why don't the GBC do this, or why don't the GBC do that, pass this law, pass that law. But in real life, things don't really work so much by passing laws. Do you think it would make, if a sannyasi is associating too much with women, do you think it will make any difference if a law is passed like that? Because everyone knows he shouldn't do that anyway. So it's not so much a matter of making big, big laws, but rather, if there's any problem, we should see to that ourselves. And within our own sphere of influence, whatever it may be, if we work to improve the situation, in the words of Kundali Prabhu, become a better brick. In other words, we're in a wall. The wall is made up of bricks. So if the brick is strong, the wall will be strong. So become a better brick. At the individual level, if we around us try to make things better, people we deal with, our dealings are very good, we try to educate the devotees around us, people will notice that, and that will attract others to try to follow. Raghunath Maharaj, maybe you know, the center he mainly oversees is at Chopati in Bombay, in which he very much stresses cooperation between the devotees, proper Vaishnava dealings, education for the brahmacharis and the congregational members, proper dealings and respect between the grihasthas living out, grihastha devotees living outside the temple and the brahmacharis living within the temple. And his idea is to make this center very nice as a model for others, and actually it is becoming a model for others. Others are seeing that this is an ideal way to run a center. So if we ourselves are ideal, that is most effective preaching. It's the onus is on us also. So having said that, I'll stop here. Again, I would like some feedback. If you have any questions or points you want to discuss, I only have one more day of my seminar. So if there is anything, I don't think I have time today because Sridhar Maharaj came, didn't he? I thought I saw him come. Yeah, he's standing right here. So, any question you have, please write it down, and I'll try and deal with it tomorrow. My dealing with it, as you may have noticed from today, doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to give you this is the solution to all the problems. It's not necessarily. But I think we came ultimately to the point that we ourselves, the best thing we can do is that we ourselves become as good devotees as we can and try to set an example for others. The onus is on all of us also. Instead of saying, why don't others improve? If we ourselves improve, that is the best way to preach. Apani Achari Prabhu Jivere Shikai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. About Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it said that he taught by his own example. That is the definition of an acharya, who teaches by his own example. Achara means proper behavior, sadachara. So this is all of our movement. It's not that we are simply a member and we're small. Well, we are small, but this movement is as much as each individual makes of it. So let us all work to be better devotees. And you don't need to be a sannyasi, a guru, a GBC, a temple president, or whatever to make an improvement. Purity is the force. So if we ourselves become pure and act purely, that will have its effect. So let us all try to be better devotees and try to be responsible members of this most important movement. Try to understand what it means to be a member of ISKCON, this most important society for rescuing people from the ocean of birth and death, the vast ocean. We have a great responsibility. It's too important that we waste time fighting among ourselves. It's so important, the work we have to do. So let us individually try to be better devotees and try to make things better for the benefit of all the other members of the society and for the benefit of the poor conditioned souls who, if we as members of ISKCON don't bring Prabhupada's books and prasadam and the holy name and the knowledge of Krishna to others, then they suffer. I'll finish there. Any question? Please write it down. Give it to me. If you don't understand English, have someone translate it and give it to me. And I'll try to deal with it to the best of my admittedly limited ability. Hare Krishna. What does that say? Hare Nam. That says Hare Nam Kula. And then what else does it say? Saturday, 10 o'clock. Jai! This is the real solution. Hari Hari.